And then, you know, you
can so before the 25 minutes, you mean?
So or you're scheduled to stop at 14:45.
So you give me a heads up at
you can do it at 35.
Okay. Right? Yes. Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. All right, people. Let's do the second block today. I'm very happy, actually excited about this talk. So Samuel from this Rivos company will talk about what's going on in the RISC-V landscape, and I think. Yeah, I'm excited because the next big step in our community, right, from open source software to open source hardware. So take it away, Samuel.
Thank you. So yeah, I'm Samuel. I work for a company called Rivos. It's a startup that does RISC-V things. And today I'm going to talk about confidential computing with RISC-V and how do we want to implement, an open source implementation of confidential computing. The previous talks have mentioned things like OptiE, some of them have mentioned things like SGX or SEV. Those are all hardware implementation of the security attributes that the first talk talked about, confidentiality, protection of memory, confidentiality of data in use. And this talk is really about why we want to achieve that with RISC-V, and the difference between the RISC-V implementation and all other existing implementations is that everything is done in the open, everything is open source, and everyone here in that room is free to come and help and contribute to that implementation. So that's why I think it's interesting. Hopefully I'm not wrong. Okay, who was on the RISC-V dev room before? Okay, so that's needed, huh? RISC-V, what is RISC-V? RISC-V is a free and open ISA, not open source ISA, because there's no source. It's an ISA, an instruction set architecture. So it's free, as in everyone can use it, can build a CPU out of it without paying in license, any fees or anything like this. Actually, everyone is free to take half of the specification, implement some weirdo CPU. It doesn't matter. You can take whatever you want out of this specification. And it's open in a sense that everything is defined in the open. So all the specs that are frozen, that's been ratified and accepted by the RISC-V International Foundation, they're ratified and some modification can be added to it, but it's more difficult. But between the time they start to be specified and the time they are ratified, everything is open. So it's on GitHub. You can go and put some comments and some pull requests on CPU specifications that are actually used in the real world. So it's quite interesting. And yeah, the specifications are released under an open source license. There are two volumes for the specification. It's fairly small. It's actually 300 pages, which is, I think, almost the same amount of pages that x86 uses for documenting the move instruction. So it's a good comparison. So yeah, it's very small. It's easy to read. Just go ahead and grab it. And yeah, the spec is split into the unprivileged and privileged specification. And I'm going to talk about this next. Why is the RISC-V ISA interesting? So first of all, it's simple, as I just said. If you look at the specification, if you read the specification, there is no micro-architectural dependency. So the specification tells you how the ISA must look like. It doesn't tell you how it must be implemented. So everyone is free to go and implement the ISA the way they want. There is no dependency on a specific implementation. And probably this is why it's small, or at least smaller. It is modular, so it's the same specification for everyone. RISC-32, RISC-64, and it's the same implementation for the developer boards that you can find in the market and the upcoming, like the Ventana, multi-core SoC, actually massively multi-core SoCs. It's the same spec, so it's modular. Everyone uses the same thing. And it's stable, so there's a base ISA and a set of standard extensions that are frozen. That means that you can rely on this to implement your CPU, and you'll be able to use whatever application are running and using those extensions. Those are frozen, they're not going to change. And if they change in a backward compatible way. And extensions are optional. So you don't have to implement all extensions to be called a RISC-V CPU. And this here is the base ISA. So that's the entire base ISA. This is small. It's very small, okay? It's easy to read. Well, kind of, not on that slide, but it's easy to read and it's small. I talked about the spec being split between privilege and unprivileged parts. And I'm going to talk about privilege mode, which is what is defined in the privilege specification. I'm going to talk about this because it's relevant, really relevant to the confidential computing implementation. So there are three basic privilege modes for a RISC-V CPU to run on: the user mode, supervisor mode, and machine mode. And you switch between those modes through two mechanisms, actually through instructions: ECALL and MRET and SRET. So if you're in user mode, if your CPU is running in user mode, which is typically an application, you make an ECALL, which is a syscall, basically. So to implement syscalls, you're gonna use the ECALL instruction. And if you're in the kernel and you need firmware services, you're gonna make another ECALL, and you go down in the privilege level, and you're more privileged. To go back, to go up and move to a less privileged world, you're gonna call MRET from the firmware world, from the machine mode, and then you're gonna call SRET to get back to from a system call. And as I said, those mode actually maps to real use cases, what we're typically used to. So the user mode is the application mode. Supervisor mode is where your kernel is going to run. And and machine mode is where your firmware, EFI kind of thing, is UEFI kind of thing, is going to run. One very important thing for the confidential computing implementation